Story Mosaics. Hey, I want to thank you for joining us today, and I want to thank you for joining us every time we come on. Every Tuesday, we drop a new video just letting you know a little bit about the stories that tie us together in community. One of the beautiful things about Story Mosaics is we all have a story, and we just want to tell those stories because it unites us. And when I find out that you're imperfect or that you have a situation maybe that you've faced and you find out that I'm imperfect, then all of a sudden we become a community. And it's always good also just to have a few laughs along the way as well. That's why I enjoy telling some of the stories that make me smile, not just take the serious side of life too. And hey, I want to also tell you that so many of you are getting online and you're liking, subscribing, following. You do not know how much we appreciate that and how much that helps us, because it helps us reach a broader audience. And literally, we are reaching across the world right now, all the way around, halfway around the globe, so that this will air at 12 hours, 24 hours ahead in different places. And so we're so thankful for that. Also, one of the things that people have taken advantage of is just the opportunity to support Story Mosaics as well. You don't know how that helps us also. Right on our Story Mosaics website, there is a place where you can go to the podcast, and just underneath there's a place where you can support us in this. And several people have taken the opportunity and advantage of coming alongside of us and donating to help keep Story Mosaics being a podcast on the air. And one of those groups is Group 725, which is a real estate agency and an organization that takes great pride in helping and serving Central Indiana in their real estate needs. And so thank you, Group 725, with Keller Williams, and what you've done to support us in this as well. I wanted to let you in on a little bit of a story that's kind of fun for me. I mean, I have to tell you, it's one of those stories that makes me smile, because a few years back, I received a grant from Eli Lilly, which is a large pharmaceutical company in Central Indiana, and they believe in helping clergy be renewed. In fact, it's called the Clergy Renewal Grant. And in that, they provide opportunities for pastors to step aside from what they're doing and missionaries to step aside from what they're doing and receive a grant for 3 months just to concentrate on renewing their spirit. You can write up the grant to include everything, anything, as long as it really is formulated around the concept that this will help you renew your energy and your focus. And so when I wrote mine, it was with a little bit of a different twist, I got to tell you. And that's probably because I'm a little bit different twisted. But one of the things I wrote into my grant was that I wanted to spend a great deal of time among the Amish. I wanted to live, not just to go visit, I wanted to live in their community. I wanted to take part in their lifestyle and in their homes. And that was something that, as far as I know, had never been done before. And it took a great deal of organization. And you might wonder, what was the motivation for me to do this? Well, it was something a little bit different. In 2008, my father passed, and I can still remember listening to my dad's stories about how when he was a boy, he would farm with horses and he'd work with these horses. It wasn't that there weren't tractors in those days, but their family was not wealthy enough to have the tractor, and so they used their horses. And I remember him telling me about the stories of how he would plant the hooves of one of the horses in the furrow, and then the horses would take off down the line, and he would put his eyes on a tree at the end so he could have a straight furrow all the way down the field. And he talked to me about how many hours it would take for those horses to work that field. So there was ingrained in me this desire to work with horses. And there's not too many places where truly horses are working still. There's a lot of show horses and things like that. But when you go live with the Amish, the horses are working horses. And so I had the opportunity to go up into Middlebury, Indiana, right next to Shipshawana, which is a large Amish community up there. And we had to jump through a lot of hoops, because the bishop, the one who was really over the district, had to approve our presence there. And we had to have a family that would take the risk for an Englishman coming into their presence. My wife and I were going to live with them. And of course, when we come into their home, we're bringing a lot of of outside influences. So there was a lot of trust that had to be built between us and Melvin and Rachel. But they entrusted us to come and live in their home. I remember the first time I went into the home where our bedroom was, and there sitting on the bed was a quilt, a handmade quilt that would probably have sold between $500 and $1,500 in Shipshawana. And that was going to be the quilt that we would sleep under. And such an honor to be a part of that community there. And I remember pulling into the parking area, actually not the parking area because there were no cars, just a bunch of buggies there that were picking up some grain from Melvin and getting some fertilizer from him. And then I pulled in there. I drove my car around to the side of the barn. I parked it, threw the keys on the seat, and walked away, and I would not be in that car for another 2 weeks. And because I was taking a step back in time to the mid to late 1800s and the rejection by the Amish of all technology that would distract them from the purest form of their faith. And so in that moment, I stepped back into a time where horses were the main elements of work. They were the main conveyance of transportation. And that became my life and my lifestyle. I remember Melvin meeting me in the driveway, and it wasn't too long after we began to share with one another that I thought our hearts are going to meld into one very easily. He was such a great guy, and he had a kind of a scraggly beard, and I learned so much in that moment from him, because at the very, very beginning, I found out something very interesting is that they don't shave their beard from that point once they're married to the rest of their lives. And so they would call it a three-finger beard or a four-finger beard or a fist beard accordingly. And I found out how long he had been married by the length of his beard there. And in fact, I want to invite you to do something. I'm going to have Delaine come on at a future opportunity and tell her part of this story as well. You know what you could do is if you have questions about the Amish community, I would love to delve into that with you. And Delaine would love to delve into it as well. You can write us at story.mosaics1@gmail.com. And you can let us know what your questions about living with the Amish would be. And we can tailor the next program to your thoughts. You know, Melvin walked me around the barn there, and he took me into the barn, and the smell, the leather tack in that barn from all the horses. And there is something about you're going to think this is weird, but there's something about the sweat on leather that gives this aroma that is such a sweet aroma. And I heard the horses there over in their paddocks and their stalls there. They were stomping the sides a little bit impatient for the day. They were ready to go work. And so we went back there and we hitched up the horses and the two beautiful Belgians that we hooked up there. And one was a little bit older, more experienced in the harness. And one was a youngster that was being trained by the older one. And that older one let the young one know exactly what the regimen was going to be. After we had hooked up the harness and gotten ready, we backed it up to a hay rake. And I rode with Melvin out to the area where they had just cut the hay the previous day. And we were going to turn the hay just to dry it out a little bit. And so Melvin started driving down the lane there, and we got to the field and we started the winching the hay rake into action there. And it's mechanical sounds there, just clink, 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 clink of all the metal pieces going together. And Melvin started telling me stories of working in the fields and how long he had been in the Amish community and how his father lived with them. And that was just the way they formed their community as well, is that the parents oftentimes lived in an extension of the home and the home would get larger and larger. How Melvin told me about his eight kids and how one of them was on Ringspringa, which is a time where this child sows their wild oats. And he was really concerned about the rebelliousness of this particular child. And in fact, he said, this is why we opened our lives to you, Keith, is because we thought you might have an understanding, having had four kids together there, you might understand what it's like to have a child that's maybe a little bit on the rebellious side or pushing the envelope. And we didn't fully understand Rimspringer at that point, how at 16 years old, a child can say, okay, they're not going to be Amish for a period of time. They're going to get the cell phone. They're going to ride in the car. They're going to break the ties that are tied to the home. But then they have to make a decision within 2 years as to whether they will be baptized Amish and stay in the community for the rest of their lives. And that was the case with this young man, as he was in the middle of his Rimspringen. And when he'd come back to the house, and he'd have his cell phone, and he'd have his car and all these things, and he'd have the money that he was earning in the community, it was a real temptation for his siblings to be pulled away from the Amish lifestyle. And Melvin, from the very beginning, began to open his heart to me, and we could feel the horses pulling. But it's just not like it where the noise of an engine is drowning out the conversation. It is the beauty and the cadence and the clip of the hooves and in the sod there that was so beautiful as we continued to rake that field. And then we pulled up to the end of a lane there, and he handed me the reins. And he said, okay, your turn. And he said, here's what you do. Make sure you drive him to the end of the fence line there, or the end of the field rather, come right up to the fence, and then give them the command to G or haw right or left accordingly. And as you do that command, then the horses will sidestep over their hooves with one another, bring the hay rake around and line themselves up. And we go down the other way once I said forward. And the first time I did that, I was in awe of these horses, these massive beasts. You know, these, each one cost about $5,000 at the auction. These horses were seasoned horses in the fields, and they were very, very, very valuable. And as they came around on that, I recognized the trust that Melvin was extending to me in that moment, that even though we just knew each other for a few moments, he was already extending his heart to my heart, and that in a sense, God was already melding our hearts together. And I know that might be hard to understand, but there was a sense of a spiritual nature that was within both of us that let us understand each other and a little bit of the history that we came out of. When we had done a couple of passes through the field, Melvin said, okay, just let me off to here and you can run the horses the rest of the way to to rake this field. But before he did, he paused for a moment. And he told me a very difficult, sad story of how a man that was his neighbor had been sickling the field, that is, cutting the hay down, getting it ready to be turned with the hay rake. And while he was sickling the field, he had driven the horses right up to the edge, right there at the fence line, and given the horses the command to G, that is, to turn right. And when he did, or actually, he gave them the command to haw, that is, they need to turn left. And he did this with a couple of young horses that were not very experienced in the field. And the one horse on the left began to crowd the horse on the right. And unfortunately, he kind of drove him into the barbed wire that was right across the fence row there. And when they got into that, it cut across his withers and just literally tore his flesh. And that happened, and the horses went wild, and it threw the Amish man off and right in the way of the big wheel that was there that came crashing across his head. And then the sickle bar that was churning out and cutting this, and it was cutting him. When he didn't come back to the house after a few hours, his family went out looking for him, and there he was in the field. And they immediately called the Lifeline helicopters to come and get him. The very first time this guy was in anything mechanical was to fly from that field on a Lifeline helicopter to Fort Wayne, Indiana, where there was a hospital that would begin the care for him. And he told me this story as just that caution that this is not child's play. This is very serious when you're driving these horses. Not only are they valuable, but they're very dangerous as well. Well, he had given me a couple of horses that were well-trained, and he left the field, and I started raking that field, and I'd bring him down to the end. And when I got to the end there, I would say G, and the horses would sidestep across. And both of these guys knew exactly where their teammate, their hitch mate was at. They'd turn the hay rake around and they'd start back down the way again, back and forth. And we raked that hay. And then finally we were done and I was ready to bring the horses back up to the barn and unhitch them and take the tack off of them. And so I got to the area where the gate was at, and it was a very pretty narrow gate. And I was a little bit afraid of what was going to happen there. And I gave the horse the command G. And they didn't move. I said, forward. They didn't move. I said, gee, they didn't move. And I couldn't understand because I'm looking at the gate. I knew where I wanted to go, but they would not obey my command. And then I recognized that the horses, embarrassingly so, the horses knew more than I did because they knew that that was not the right way to go. And so a little bit with a little bit of manure on my face at this point, probably, I gave them the command to haw, and they went right through the gate and started taking me back to the barn. Oh, there were so many moments like that where I had a chance to learn so much. Every morning started at 4:30 in the morning. We were working a dairy farm, and that dairy farm had about 40 head of cattle on it. Each cow gives about 6 gallons of milk a day, and we would bring them in, and they knew exactly the order that they came in and that they would stand in their stanchions, and they would be milked there. And when we got there about 4:30, the first thing we did was we'd grab a piece of toast before we left the house and we'd put a little fluff on it. That is peanut butter and marshmallow mix. And we'd take that out to the barn with us. And the girls would, there were two girls that would go out with us, their daughter, Melvin and Rachel's daughters. And they would go out there. And there was one that was just a little wisp of a girl. She was just so petite. And yet she was the cow whisperer, if you will. She knew how to deal with these cows, and they listened to her as that she gave the commands to get in there. And then she'd get them ready to be milked, and we'd start the milking process. And one of the most special moments was as we started that Brenda was her name, and Brenda would start singing the milking songs. It was in Pennsylvania Dutch, so I didn't understand the words, but I could tell the songs had a cadence that they matched their work to. And the cows appreciated the cadence as well because it just, you could see them relaxing. And when a cow relaxes, it actually gives more milk. And so she would sing the songs. And the way that Amish sing in those settings is, and the way they sing in the churches, one person who's leading starts the song with just a couple of measures, a couple of words, and then the others join in. And I so wanted to be able to join in on their music, but I couldn't. But all I could do was sit there and listen to the beauty of that. Then we would come back up to the house, clean up a little bit, go back into the house and get our breakfast that Rachel had fixed for us. And it was usually quite a spread because we were hungry after already having about 2 hours work from 4:30 to 5:30 to 6:30. We did use electricity, and people always wonder. I thought Amish weren't allowed to use electricity, but the bishop had given a special appeasement, if you will, so that during the milking process for that 2 hour period of time, you could have electricity that came from a generator there. You could turn the generator off. As soon as the milking was over, you had to turn the generator off again. So we had the milking there, and there were so many aspects to the day, the rhythm of the day, because from 4:30 on till 9 o'clock that night, we worked. There was literally not a moment except for when we ate or drank some water. Those were the only moments we rested. It was something that I had never done so much work in my life. One of the guys who had an opportunity to have me on his farm said, if I had known you were such a great worker, I would have gone ahead and had you work for me rather than Melvin getting you. But he said, will you come back next year and work for me? And I said, no, not at all, not at all, not even tempted. You know what? There was one thing I learned about the Amish. You know, they wear buttons. They don't wear zippers. And I found out why. At least in my mind, I found out why, okay? I don't think that maybe this is the real historical reason, but one time Melvin said that he wanted me to go out and water the horses that were clear out in the one of the areas out at the back of the farm. It was about a quarter mile down there. And to do that, I had to go out there and get these two big barrels, bottom of the barrels, and fill them with water for the horses that were out there just before we got ready to go to work. And so here we go, walking out there, and I'm just kind of just relishing the morning air and the dew in the September, the time frame that I was there. And it was such a beautiful, beautiful setting. The sun was just coming up and the early morning dew, like I said, was on the ground. And when I got out there, there's an electric fence. And I knew that at that moment, they were starting the milking process. So I knew that the electric fence was on. But what I figured is I could shinny underneath that fence to get to where I needed to go, rather than walking all the way down, halfway down the field to get to a gate and open the gate and then come all the way back. I could just kind of crawl under that fence and get to the places where I could fill the water there. So I crawled underneath there, a little bit of army style crawling. But when I got done, I was covered with the dew of the morning. I mean, every piece of clothing that I had was wet. And I just felt miserable, but I went ahead and filled the areas with the water, went down to the next one, crawled under that one too, and watered those horses as well. And then I got ready and I noticed that one of the wires was kind of sagging a little bit between the poles. And I thought, you know what? I think I can step across that, straddle that, and I won't have to get my clothes wet again. So I walked over to the fence and I threw one leg over. And at that moment, I realized why the Amish don't have zippers. My zipper got caught in. Yeah, my zipper got caught in an electric fence, and that'll put a charge into you. I didn't need anybody to help me across the other side. Let me put it that way. I leapt up into the air and I understand just about how many volts that electricity puts in there. Well, Melvin got the biggest kick out of this story when I came back up and I'm still limping a little bit and straddled a little bit. And he's laughing at when I tell him the story. When we get to church that Sunday, he can't wait. He can't wait because when you get to church, it's a really unique setting. It was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable that we got to go to church with them, but we had built so much trust with them. I mean, just the very simple thing that we never took a picture while we were there, where cell phones never came out. And we never took a picture of them while we were there because it's absolutely forbidden for you to take pictures of the Amish. There's a lot of people who do it. They might not be informed about it. But the fact is that when you take a picture of them, you're creating a graven image, and that graven image is abhorrent to them. They don't place anything in front of God. And so we never took a picture of them during that time frame. And there were 1,000 times I wanted to take a picture of Melvin or Rachel or their kids. I could tell you story after story after story of these kids and their antics and the things that I would have gotten a shot of. But we were very respectful of their lifestyle. And so we got to go to church with them because they invited us and the bishop said it was okay. And I'll never forget when we got on the property, we got there early and Melvin wanted to make sure we got there early. And because he just wanted to kind of show us off, if you will. And Delaine had dressed appropriately. She had her head covering on. I had my hat on. I had grown out my beard a little bit, so I looked pretty Amish at the moment. And so, when we got there, though, we were some of the earliest to arrive. And one of the interesting things about the Amish is Melvin was an elder within the church. And so when the three lead elders in the church come together, and one of the things that they do is they don't know who's going to preach that Sunday. All of them have to go and prepare, and then they cast lots to see who is going to preach that Sunday. And fortunately, it didn't fall to Melvin that Sunday. It fell to one of the other guys, and he gave the message. But Melvin wanted to let me sit in the circle of the men, because the men and the women go to different areas. He wanted me to go to the circle of the men and tell them over and over and over and over the story about me and the electric fence. And they got the biggest kick out of that story. One of the things that about the Amish, though, is when they gather there, the women go into the house generally just to get the meal that's coming after the church service, and the men are outside and having conversation a little bit about the farming and what's going on and everything like that. And what happened there was then when you arrive, they all line up, and there's a scripture that says, greet one another with a holy kiss. And they go down the line, and the men kiss other men all the way down the line, but they don't kiss the unmarried, and they don't kiss, and I couldn't have been more thankful for this, they don't kiss the outsider or the Englishman that's joined them. So I didn't have to get kissed on that occasion. And I felt just a breath of fresh air just washed over me. And we had just an amazing time at their church service that day as well, listening to how they do the music. It's all a cappella, and how they also reverence scripture. And you're going to think this is a little bit weird as well, but this will help you formulate some of your questions that you're now going on story.mosaics1@gmail.com and sending us your questions, and Delaine will help answer some of these as well. But one of the things that happened is at the time of the scripture reading, they all stand up. The men stand up, the women stand up, the scripture is read, but before it starts, all of the women have to turn and face the wall opposite, so they're not looking at the men during the scripture reading. So that the idea is so that there will be no distractions. You're not looking over there at your husband, or you're not looking over there looking at your girlfriend or anything like that. And when you go to church, it's a full day. We got there early in the morning. We were going to spend most of the day there. That changed a little bit, and I'll tell you why in just a moment, but that changed a little bit. But we were there, and contrary to what you might think that, boy, when Amish get together, they have these huge meals. Not on church Sunday. It was a very simple meal of fluff and bread, fresh baked bread, fluff and bread. Remember, that's peanut butter and marshmallow mixed together, and a few relishes that were there, and the benches that we sat on, all when they flipped them around, became the tables that we were at. It was just I'm just sitting there seeing this in your mind. They would just fold over, and now you sat on one side, and the table right before you was where you were eating off of now. And then we'd go outside, and everybody was playing games, and all the guys and the girls were playing volleyball out there, and it was just almost like a family reunion every Sunday, because this was their time together as a community. This was their district that would meet. The fact is, we were there among the Amish at the time when Melvin and Rachel were preparing their house and their land for the church service to be at their church. And that was a pretty interesting moment, because they wanted every cobweb out of the barn. They wanted me to power wash. I power washed the milking parlor and all the stanchions, so it was just gleaming. They wanted everything done perfect so that they could show off their church, their community, when the church came to their house. It wasn't a vain thing. It was a pride in what God had given them. But I also remember that that was the day our girls were coming up. They were going to come up. They were going to take us home. And actually, Delaine was going to go home a little bit earlier, and I was going to stay a little bit longer. And we had instructed the girls to make sure that they wore modest clothing and that they were modestly dressed and that they conducted themselves in a modest way when they were coming to church. But in this case, I have several gorgeous daughters, okay? And the fact is, when you have pretty girls, all the Amish eyes turned towards them. That didn't matter. Did not matter how they dressed and how carefully they had dressed. Every boy turned his head and watched those two girls walk up the lane there. And I saw the bishop go over to Melvin, and Melvin said to me, I think we'll go ahead and leave now. And so we went back to his house because they were a distraction from the church service at that point. You know what? There was a lesson there, though. And I'm going to actually hold it over to when Delane's here and tell you the beauty of what took place in those weeks that we spent with Melvin, their kids, and Rachel as well, and what it meant to our lives and how they transformed our lives. It was an amazing thing that they took the time to invest in us and we took the time to invest in them. And Delane has a few of her own stories that are just as rich. But we're going to come back to that next time, okay? And I want to leave you with a couple of ideas, okay? First of all, I want you to send your messages to story.mosaics, numeral one, at gmail.com. Send us some of your questions because there's a lot of things that I bet you're wondering about the Amish community. Maybe you visited an Amish community in Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio. We have the largest concentration of the Amish in all the United States, but perhaps you've come and visited within the Amish communities and maybe you have some questions that you want to know. And maybe there's just some question that you wonder, why would people live like that? And we would love to answer some of those questions in a future podcast for you. But as we close here, just in wrapping this up, there was something that took place that was very, very meaningful for me. Because Melvin and I had a lot of deep conversations just about our own kids, about our faith. And Melvin talked about how there are a lot of rules. In fact, there is a book that is probably 2 inches thick of all of the ordinances and the rules and the laws and the covenants that the Amish have to keep. And it's a religion based on adherence and obedience and the works of following that. And he talked with me about how when I spoke about my relationship with God, I had a relationship of grace with God. And I extended that grace to our kids. I extended that grace to him. I extended that grace to his son. And one of his daughters was a teacher there, and she came, and she was just in awe of this. When you graduate from eighth grade in the Amish community, you can become a teacher, and then you live at the school. And so in this case, she lived at the school and she was taught, but she'd come over and she'd want to spend time and understand a little bit more of what grace was. On the last day we were there, each morning we would read the devotional and he would read it in Pennsylvania Dutch, and then he'd read it in English for my sake. And in fact, while we were there, in respect to us, they did not speak Pennsylvania Dutch. They spoke only English so that we always understood. And I can only remember one time when there was a little bit of tension there that they started speaking in Pennsylvania Dutch, and Melvin stopped them and said, no, we'll speak in English. On that day, though, we had our devotional book, and we got ready to read it, and it become part of a ritual that I loved. And then Melvin on that day took the devotional book and handed it to me across the table with 10 people gathered around that table, his family, his kids. And he said, I want you to read today's devotional. And I read it, and it had 100% to do with the grace that we have in Christ Jesus. What an amazing, amazing moment. He cried. I cried. I don't think Melvin had probably cried too many tears in his life, but at that moment, our hearts were so much in tune with one another that he understood grace maybe in a very special way that day. Hey, I want to thank you for being part of Story Mosaics today. Don't forget to go and look online, to go to storymosaics.com to look at the podcast. There's a place where you can become a part of this. And we've had so many people be donors that are helping us bring this message that is contained in stories, the stories that change lives. Thank you for joining us today at Story Mosaics.